Well, this past Monday, President Obama nominated former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray to head the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a new federal organization created by the passage of the Financial Reform Bill last year. The president had wanted Elizabeth Warren, whose brainchild this new agency was, to fill the post. She became a lightning rod for criticism, both because of Republican opposition to the bureau itself and for her outspoken positions on financial reform and consumer protection. The new agency officially opens its doors tomorrow morning, and it seemed like a good time to take a look at what this new entity will do and the controversy surrounding who will run it. Joining me this morning is Peter Schrader, reporter for The Hill on finance, taxes, and corporate governance, and a regular contributor to their On the Money blog. Peter Schrader, good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having
me. Well, you're welcome. Without you, we wouldn't have a program. What is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? What is it supposed to do?
Well, basically, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or the CFPB, as it's called, it was created as part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Law last summer. And basically, the goal of it is to house all of the laws, all of the regulations that are targeted at protecting consumers in financial transactions under one roof. Previously, all the different rules that affected consumers were housed in various different banking regulators. And with the goal with creating this particular bureau is that now you get those all in one place, and you have one institution that is focused primarily just on how consumers are affected when they start entering into financial deals.
Well, you know, that seems, I don't know, pretty common sense to do that. Why has this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau been so controversial?
Well, the Bureau has been controversial basically since it was first proposed. It was one of the more controversial points of the Wall Street Reform Law, which had a lot of different moving parts. And one of the primary critiques that you hear from Republicans that kind of have opposed the way it's structured and its existence is that by establishing a bureau that focuses just on consumers, there's the concern that the bureau will pursue certain motivations that would affect the banks in a negative way. And because the Consumer Bureau is simply focused on consumers and they're not concerned with exactly how the banks are affected, there's a concern that the CFPB will pursue policies that will adversely affect the banks, and they won't have to take into account how the banks are necessarily affected by that.
Can you give an example of what they're talking about?
Well, the examples are a little bit light, considering that the CFPB still hasn't opened its doors officially yet. There's a lot of talk about streamlining the paperwork that consumers have to fill out. But also, the CFPB will have the ability to examine banks, keep an eye on them, and make sure that they're adhering to the consumer protection laws appropriately. And that means that if the CFPB finds that a bank is not following those laws correctly, they do have a number of enforcement tools at their disposal. They would have the ability to sue the banks and require them to do it. And even though some CFPB officials have said that they're not looking primarily to be doing this, they also have the ability to ban certain financial products if they think that those products are to the detriment of consumers and they're not really designed in their best interests.
What kinds of financial products would those be?
Well, that's one of the million-dollar questions. We've seen Republicans press officials in charge of setting up the CFPB with what sort of things they might be looking at. And so far, the details have been fairly light. Some of the culprits that people think might come under close scrutiny from the CFPB would be things like payday lenders or other sort of financial tools that some people have criticized in the past for not for taking advantage of consumers. But as far as the actual Bureau is concerned, we haven't heard anything hard and solid in terms of what specifically they might be looking to crack down on.
Well, many states have consumer protection organizations. I know that in Wisconsin, we have some pretty tough consumer protection laws. They are mostly concerned, however, with they're not mostly concerned with what banks are doing. They're mostly concerned with things like being defrauded in other kinds of transactions, scammers, things like that, defective products, and so forth. This is purely aimed at the financial services industry. As you point out in one of your articles, it is the idea of this agency is pretty popular with the general public.
That's right. We've seen polling when people are asked about how they feel about having an agency specifically devoted to looking at protecting consumers. Perhaps not surprisingly, the polling typically shows that most of the public is in favor of such a thing. And as a result, the supporters of such a bureau are quick to point to those polls and as evidence that the bureau needs to go ahead, and they use it as a way to kind of combat attempts to maybe limit it or slow how quickly it can start doing its business.
Well, now, even though the agency doesn't officially open its doors until tomorrow, it's still been doing stuff. I mean, they've been setting up, and there have been some activities connected to this new bureau, right?
That's correct. There's been a number of things that you see just that come with putting together an agency, building one from the ground up. There's been extensive amount of hiring at the bureau. I think right now they're up to about 400, maybe 500 employees, primarily in D.C., but also in a number of offices across the country. And you see, you know, some of those more mundane things like, you know, renting out the office space, doing those sorts of things. But they've also already started some of the projects that they're hoping to work on. One of the things that the Bureau has been quick to point out is they're working on figuring out how to simplify and streamline paperwork that consumers have to file whenever they apply for a mortgage, with the goal being to make the terms easier to understand and a little bit simpler for consumers to get through.
Yeah, that's been one of the things that there's been quite a bit written about, and that is one of the goals I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren, but because this was kind of her brainchild. But one of the goals of this agency is to make the whole process of borrowing money more transparent, purchasing a home. I mean, there are documents that only lawyers and CPAs can understand when you go through this thing, and a lot of people have gotten into trouble because they did not understand the financial instruments that they were getting involved with. I'm thinking about, option arm mortgages, for example. But there certainly seems to be some need to make this process more understandable for the average person. What is controversial about doing that?
Well, you're right in that if you ever listen to Elizabeth Warren talk about the Bureau, which she basically thought up and helped kind of steer through the creation of the process, one of the first things she points out is that she wants to make financial paperwork easier for consumers to understand so that they can readily compare the prices and the terms of various financial products and then make a decision based on what they would like to pursue. The concern with the CFPB is not with the notion of simplifying paperwork. That's something that everyone says that they're on board with, but the concern is with how the powers of the new Bureau might be implemented. The concern is that potentially the Bureau could overreach in what they want to do, and what you hear a lot from over here on Capitol Hill in D.C. is the concern from members of Congress that they don't have a lot of oversight over the Bureau. The Bureau was designed to be largely independent of the reach of lawmakers, and for members who are concerned that the Bureau might be too powerful, that's a concern for them.
Well, I guess the counter argument to that, though, is that you want to make sure that this Bureau would not be susceptible to the kind of political strong arming that Congress is known for, regardless of party.
That's certainly true, and that's exactly the sort of thing that advocates for the Bureau, even Elizabeth Warren herself, are quick to point out. They point out that all banking regulators basically have a certain level of independence from the congressional process, precisely for that reason, so that they're somewhat inoculated from the political process and not necessarily going to be pressured in the work they do. And advocates for the Bureau argue that, considering that they'll be looking at financial institutions as well, they should deserve that kind of similar sort of bubble.
All right. The decisions of this bureau, though, can be vetoed. How does that work?
It's currently another aspect of the Wall Street Reform Law is it established this panel called the Financial Stability Oversight Council. And basically what that is that gathers in all of the top regulators from across the federal government. We're talking about the Treasury Secretary. We're talking about the Chairman of the Federal Reserve. Basically everyone who is in charge of watching the financial system, it brings them together into one panel that meets on a regular basis to talk about issues that affect the broad financial system as a whole, given that one of the critiques that came out of the crisis was that there was no one looking at the financial system as one entire unit. Everyone was focused on their own kind of individual aspects of it, but no one saw the broader issues that were affecting the whole thing. And the director of the CFPB will get one of the seats on that panel. And the way that the Bureau is currently structured is that if the Financial Stability Oversight Council determines that one of the rules that the CFPB is trying to put in place could pose a danger to the financial system, they have the ability to take a vote. And basically, if a supermajority, if 7 of the 10 members vote that it would have that effect, they have the ability to basically shoot down that rule and not allow it to take place.
Well, that sounds like oversight to me.
Oh, well, and that's something that that again advocates are quick to point out is that they do have that check in place, and that other regulators aren't subject to that same sort of oversight from other regulators. But it, still, it doesn't seem to be enough for people who are concerned about what the Bureau might be doing. There's legislation in Congress right now that would make it easier for that council to overturn rules that the CFPB are putting in place. And what we hear from Republicans in Congress who aren't happy with it is that that oversight, that overturning mechanism, the threshold is far too high for any sort of rule to be overturned. Basically, they argue that it's nonsense to suggest that only rules that could affect the entire financial system should be put on the table for a double check. Rather, they suggest that any rule that could adversely affect the safety and soundness of any financial institution should be checked. And then also they want to see the ability to overturn that rule reduced to just a simple majority of members of the panel as opposed to the supermajority.
Of course, the Democrats are saying, hey, look, we voted on this. It's a done deal. It's over. Quit going back and trying to change things after we've already made a decision. That's probably not going to fly very far either.
Well, yeah, obviously, there's plenty of people say this is the law, we should work with the law and make sure that it goes forward. And, you know, what you hear, there are certainly critics of the Bureau that would like to see it go away tomorrow or yesterday if they could even make that happen. But then you also hear from people who say, look, we understand that the CFPB exists, but our focus is going to be on what we think are addressing a few flaws that we see in the Bureau, and we want to make a few small changes to make it function a little bit better. But as you can imagine, that doesn't really win over a lot of supporters of the CFPB who think that they're just attempts to kind of limit the ability of what it can do.
Well, both sides have to be a little bit careful here in terms of how, you know, anything that happens in Washington is going to play out in the next election cycle. I mean, for the Republicans, this paints them more, even more firmly into the corner of big business and big banks and against consumers and the average person. For the Democrats, this is just more meddling with private enterprise, and we need to just let the market decide everything and caveat emptor. Both sides have some risk here, don't they?
That's exactly right, and you're seeing a lot of efforts to kind of position the debate over this Bureau within, the particular lens that either party wants it to see. As you pointed out, the Democrats are, quick to point out that they are the ones who want to have the backs of consumers. They're the ones that want to protect them from the big bad banks that, misbehave so badly in the financial crisis, and now we want to make sure that consumers have a watchdog specifically for them. And then meanwhile, the counterargument from Republicans is that this Bureau, it lacks oversight, it lacks any sort of check on its power, and it has so much power that it could end up really meddling in the business of these financial institutions in a way that it makes it difficult for them to do their work, and then in turn that would make it difficult for them to lend money, get the economy moving again, and so that's kind of the counterargument you see to that, but they're definitely both trying to position this debate in a way that is most advantageous to them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I wonder what our listeners think about this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Are you somebody who thinks, yeah, about time that we got somebody who can speak for us? Or do you think, hey, you know what? We're all on our own, and we need to be able to speak for ourselves, and we don't need any more federal agencies telling anybody what to do. Whichever side you're on, or if you're in the middle, kind of like me, let us know what you think. Do you have questions for our guest about how this new agency will operate and what it will do? And as a consumer, how do you feel about this? Let us know. Here's the phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email works too, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And there's a Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page. You can go there and leave a comment, and I'll share it on the radio. We're talking about the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It goes, it opens its doors tomorrow morning. It still doesn't have a director. And one of the things we're going to talk about when we come back from our break is that at least one GOP senator says that President Obama's nominee is dead on arrival. There's some question about whether anybody can get confirmed in this Senate, but this one specifically, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the future of Elizabeth Warren, whose brainchild this whole thing was. What's next for her? She isn't going to head this agency. She's been a special advisor to President Obama on these issues, and there's a rumor going around that she may run for Senate in Massachusetts against Scott Brown. We'll talk about all of those things, and we'll take your calls in just a moment. My guest in this hour is Peter Schrader, and we'll be continuing our conversation with him in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. It's 23 minutes after 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. After 3 on Here on Earth, Gene Faraca talks with poet Roger Houston about the rich Iranian poetry that helped him make it through his detention and interrogation in Iran. That's Here on Earth after 3 o'clock this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the new Consumer Protection Agency at the federal level, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This new agency was created by the passage of the Financial Reform Bill last year. The president has just nominated former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray to head this new Consumer Protection Bureau. And we're talking about that. We're also going to be talking about Elizabeth Warren, whose brainchild this was, and what may be in her future. My guest is Peter Schrader, reporter for The Hill on finance, taxes, and corporate governance. He's also a regular contributor to their On the Money blog. Well, Peter, we have full phone lines almost immediately. As soon as I gave the number, people want to talk about this and they have questions. So let's take some calls. We'll start with Chris, who is somewhere in Wisconsin. Chris, go ahead. Hi, Chris. Can you hear me?
You're very quiet. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I wondered how the new reform laws, if they in any way relate to the old Glass-Steagall laws that separated investment banking with savings and loans to kind of keep things in their own arenas.
All right, let's, Chris. You're really hard to hear. You've got kind of a bad cell there. But Chris wants to know if this has anything to do with. Is this anything like the old Glass-Steagall law?
That was one of the when the Wall Street reform law was being hashed out in Congress. That was one of the topics that came up. Should we kind of reestablish this firewall between investment banks and regular depository banks? However, the law actually doesn't address that. You can still have a financial institution that engages in both of those types of business, but instead they have in place a number of checks that Congress hopes will kind of rein in some of the excesses that you saw that led up to the financial crisis. For example, there's new limits under something called the Volcker Rule, which basically limits the amount of trading activity a financial institution can do with their own money, not at the direction of consumers. Basically, that means they can't be making their own investments or bets on the side with the potential that if those bets go sour, all of a sudden the entire institution gets wrapped into all of those problems. So as you can see, that's kind of getting at the same sort of angle, but in terms of putting up a hard boundary between investment banks and depository banks, that wasn't in the law.
And that really wouldn't have had, this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau wouldn't have really had anything to do with that anyway.
That's right.
The nominee for to head this new bureau, the former Attorney General in the state of Ohio, Richard Cordray, a senator, a Republican senator, said immediately after the nomination, this is dead on arrival. Is it going to be possible for President Obama to nominate anybody to head this new agency and get it through the Senate?
Well, if you listen to the vast majority of Republicans in the Senate, it looks like it's going to be a hard fight no matter who the president had put forward. Back in May, a group of senators, of Republican senators, announced that they would be blocking any nominee to head the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, regardless of who it is, unless there were several changes made to how the Bureau is structured and how it's operated, a bunch of changes that were designed to, what Republicans said, designed to bring in more checks on the Bureau's power, subject it to more oversight, the type of thing we had just talked about before. And now that we actually have a nomination in place, Republicans say they're not wavering on that at all. They're saying that they're going to keep holding up this nomination unless they see some major changes, and those changes aren't really ones that have seen any sort of receptivity from the administration or Democrats. So it seems like it's going to be a bit of a fight going forward.
Well, one of the things they want to do is not have a a director of this agency at all. They want to have some kind of committee run the run this, don't they?
That's right. One of the major demands that you're seeing from the Republicans is they don't want a single director at the top of the Bureau dictating its work. They want to see a bipartisan commission put in place. You see similar arrangements at some other regulators like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which keeps an eye on banks. They're operated by a commission. The Federal Reserve is similarly operated by a commission. They obviously have chairmen who kind of serve as the face of the agency, but everything gets decided based on a number of individuals. And the argument from Republicans is that it's better to have a bipartisan commission in place. It ensures that the work the Bureau does is more balanced, more deliberate, as opposed to having one single individual that can kind of run things. But what you hear from supporters of the Bureau is that this is just an attempt to slow down the work the Bureau can do, make sure that Republicans have an ability to limit what it wants to do, and there's really no receptivity, so far at least, to the idea of replacing the way the top of that Bureau is structured.
Well, it looks to me as if under that structure, the Bureau wouldn't really be able to get anything done because you would essentially have the same kind of gridlock that you have in Congress.
Well, that's by design. The nature of such a commission would be to make sure that any sort of initiative has to have some sort of broad level of support, and that by design would mean that certain things that people who may want run the Bureau would want to pursue would be blocked by people who have a different outlook. The argument on one side is that makes for better operations because it makes sure that the approach is balanced and deliberate. But the argument from other people is that this is just a way to slow everything down.
All right, let's take another call. This time it'll be Andy in Pell Lake. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. As usual, just like the deficit, this thing is closing the barn door after all the horses went out. I mean, we have in both Republicans and Democrats, as we all know, people who sat around because there are no term limits. All these people have been around for 1,000 years, okay, and it watched the crisis unfold, actually made the crisis happen for all the Fannie and Freddie and everything, then watched the collapse happen, and now trying to effectively close the barn door after we're dealing with an absolutely disastrous housing market, monumental foreclosures and lowering prices. This really gives you a real eye point or a viewpoint of how our government solves problems. And you're seeing it in the budgetary situation and so on. So this is just a micro of a major problem that the American people are dealing with our elected officials. Thank you.
Well, Andy, let me hang on a second. Let me ask you a question. Do you have a problem with a federal bureau that's designed to help consumers? No, I think we lost Andy. All right. Anything there you want to respond to, Peter Schrader?
There's plenty of controversies to be had with this Wall Street reform law. There's a lot of moving pieces, it's a fight that it's been almost a year. Actually, tomorrow will be 1 year since the Wall Street reform law has been passed, and the debate is still going on plenty strong.
All right. Let's go next to John in Milwaukee.
Hi,
John, good morning.
two examples of consumer gouging that I've seen in the last month. One was I had a friend who had accessed an ATM machine and got a $5 ATM charge. And if I remember correctly, ATM charges were free before. The other one was I got a credit card where they offered me $30 off or something to take out a credit card, and I finally got the rules on it, and it was like a 35% interest rate. And obviously, I'm not going to use it. But to me, it seems like there's consumer gouging going on. And I was wondering what exactly prevented the consumer gouging back in the days when we had free ATM transactions and actually reasonable interest charges on credit cards. Who did that before we had this? And when did it change that it got out of hand to the point where we had to reinstitute an organization to rein in the gouging that these places are doing?
Well, it's Peter Schrader. As I said at the outset, there have always been laws on the books that are designed to protect consumers from deceitful or maybe fraudulent financial products. The problem from some people's perspective was that they were housed in a bunch of different regulatory shops. So basically, there's not a single place that was looking at just what is affecting consumers. So the idea is that once you set up a bureau that's specifically set at that, then you have someone who's just looking at that purpose, and they get and consumers as a result are better protected by that. As financial institutions continue to develop, as they continue to grow, there's always going to be places people are looking to make more revenue. And some people think that financial institutions maybe have gone a little bit too far in one direction. And, one of the big critiques of supporters of the Bureau make is that it's impossible to to really get to the bottom of what a financial product will cost, what the terms will be. It's the jargon is too heavy for anyone to really get through. And the notion of the Bureau is that you have someone there who's going to be making the argument that these terms need to be simpler. We need to be able to have consumers who can easily read plain English documents. So that's kind of serving as a natural pushback to that entire notion. I mean, the laws have been on the books for years, but now, after the financial crisis, after all this public anger at the way financial institutions were functioning before then, you finally now are seeing an effort to put together a bureau that is focused just on what the consumers are doing as opposed to what the institutions are doing.
John, thanks for the call. Open line, or there's a line available for you, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We're getting some emails. I'll share a few of those in just a moment. You can also leave a comment on the Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page, and we'll share it on the air. Here's an email from Paul, who asks, did President Obama individually and through his administration vigorously back Elizabeth Warren? Or did he essentially sacrifice her and her nomination to his persisting theme of compromise? More generally, has he been aggressively seeking passage or support of his nominees? There is press to the effect that nominations have been somewhat stranded without sufficient effective support from the administration. How hard has President Obama worked to get his nominees through the Senate?
Well, there's been the fight over nominees is a perpetual fight in Congress, particularly when there's one party that is has enough power within the Senate to block nominees of a president that happens to belong to a different party. And with President Obama and Senate Republicans, that's no different. We've seen a number of nominees that the president has put forward either be blocked by Republicans or withdraw after facing fierce criticism from Republicans. And so that's continuing. And what we saw with Elizabeth Warren was that she was, widely thought to be the person who really came up with the Bureau, the person who was its primary advocate throughout the drafting of the Wall Street Reform Law. And really, she's been the face of the Bureau since it was created. But obviously she wasn't put forward as a nominee by the president. That clearly was a disappointment to many of her supporters. Many liberals are strongly supportive of Warren. She's been the face of this bureau, which has been kind of a subject of political controversy for basically a year now, ever since it was created. And so the thinking was that Warren basically had served as basically become you know, it was almost too personal of a matter at this point, because it was not really about the Bureau, it was about Elizabeth Warren. So the thinking behind the Cordray nomination is that you, if you remove Warren from it, you allow her to set up the Bureau, and then you nominate another person to head it, and then it becomes much more about the actual institution as opposed to the personality of the person who is credited with kind of thinking it up in the first place.
Well, let's talk about her a little bit. She says, she's quoted in one of the articles that I read, she says, "I'm not done throwing rocks yet." She's known as kind of a rock thrower. She's very outspoken, very much in favor of protecting consumers against what she feels are predatory practices on the part of financial institutions, not just banks, but a lot of different kinds of, there are more financial institutions in this country than just banks. She has made no secret of what she thinks. She's had a number of run-ins with congressional Republicans in hearings and so forth. Really, she doesn't apologize and doesn't back down, which has made her kind of a lightning rod for a lot of criticism.
And that's right. And given that getting a nomination through the Senate is a tall task, basically any time that you try to do it, especially if there's any level of controversy either with the person who's been nominated or the institution that they're trying to fill, it made for a pretty tall task to get Elizabeth Warren confirmed. And as a result, you're seeing that the administration decided to go in a different route, nominate Richard Cordray, a person who doesn't have nearly the same, you know, high profile that Elizabeth Warren did, but at the same time, that lower profile means that there's less of a history, less of you know, the controversies that people are aware about that have kind of you know, followed Warren for months as she's kind of faced off against Republicans on several different occasions. So the thinking behind the nomination of Cordray is that you get someone in who doesn't have that same history, and maybe that you know, smooths out the nomination fight a little bit, but you know, as I said before, it doesn't really look like Republicans are any softer to the idea of a nominee to head the CFPB now than they were when people thought it might have been Elizabeth Warren.
Well, and this nomination isn't the only one that's sitting in the Senate waiting to be moved. The Republicans basically aren't letting the president have anybody.
That's right. I mean, we've seen a common example of this kind of ongoing drama was Peter Diamond was nominated to join the Federal Reserve Board, be one of their commissioners, and he's an MIT economist. He has he recently won the Nobel Prize for his work on unemployment and labor issues, but he faced strong opposition from Republicans who said he wasn't a strong candidate to join the Fed. The administration actually nominated him three different times, and each time it was blocked, and finally he withdrew from the process after, I think it was over a year of kind of trying to work his way through that process, and he finally withdrew and said, you know, this is just too much trouble. The confirmation fight it's too long, and it's frustrating, and then you also see, but it's not just Republicans who are blocking nominees. There's a number of spots, especially in the financial sector, where regulators are lacking people in certain positions that require an administration nomination, and those nominations just haven't come forward. There's you know, a lot of balls up in the air for the White House to be juggling right now, and it looks as if some of these nominees may have kind of been put on the back burner as some more pressing issues are dealt with.
Do you think we could see a whole batch of recess appointments coming up?
Well, you know, recess appointment is kind of the natural follow-up thought to after you start thinking about these tough confirmation battles. We haven't seen very many from the administration just yet. A lot of people were hoping that Elizabeth Warren would be one of those. But, you know, a recess appointment always carries with it its own set of challenges. Obviously, senators aren't very pleased when they get bypassed in the process of naming nominees. They think that the confirmation process is there for a reason. It's there so that they can vet the candidates and have a say in who gets put in place up to the administration. But, you know, the counterargument to that is that if this is taking so long and we're not getting anywhere, you know, maybe we need to kind of move things along here. So it's really a question of how badly does the administration want to have certain people in place. You know, some people are wondering if Richard Cordray is going to be a recess nomination. If Republican opposition continues to be so strong, you know, maybe he gets recess appointed. But you can be sure that if that were the case, you're going to be hearing a lot of complaints from Republicans in the Senate about it.
All right. We're Let's see. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, we've got a bunch of people on the phone who want to have a comment, have a question. And there's a line available right now if you want to call in at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau established under the financial reform law that was passed a year ago. It's going to go into business tomorrow. It opens its doors officially. Still doesn't have a head, but it does have a mission. Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back in just a moment. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. It's 9:43. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up next hour, well, fish are the last wild food, but the ocean is in the process of being picked clean. Next hour, we'll find out if farming fish can take the place of catching them and what role genetically modified fish could play in our lives and diets. I'll be talking with Brian Walsh, an environmental columnist from Time Magazine. That's coming up next hour here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a new federal agency created by the passage of the Financial Reform Bill last year. My guest is Peter Schrader, reporter for The Hill on finance, taxes, and corporate governance. He's also a regular contributor to their On the Money blog. We'll go next to Bob in Waukesha. Bob, good morning.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me on. You had a caller on earlier who was talking about the interest rates on credit cards and how that got started. And I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, that the banks started restricting the credit they were issuing to people. And they simply put a clamp on it, and to the point where people started clamoring for more and more credit. And if you remember at that time, housing loans were 17, 18, 19, 20%. And people were getting crushed by housing loans, but they wanted their credit cards. So the banks simply put full-page ads in the newspapers like the New York Times to get the usury laws changed. And, of course, we the people got together and told our politicians, let's raise those rates. And now today you sit with 20, 30% credit cards. And I wonder what's next now that the banks have started restricting credit again. Are we going to go back to that? Or what's the next bright idea?
Thanks for the call, Bob. Peter Schrader?
Well, it's you know, that's a certainly a valid point. It's not as if the financial institutions were just kind of necessarily shoving a lot of these products onto consumers. There has to be people willing to actually buy into those products. Now, with this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it's not, based on what we hear from the officials, it's not as if they're going to immediately be going out and telling banks you can't charge above X interest rate, you can't offer X financial product. Primarily, the goal is going to be more making the terms of those products easier to understand. So, perhaps maybe you have a credit card that has a 30% interest rate, but what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau wants is they want the financial institutions to put that product forward and make it clear to consumers who are looking it over, okay, I'm going to be charged 30% interest rate if X, Y, or Z happens. So the notion there is that if you put the terms of the product forward, consumers can make the choices for themselves about what they actually want, and they're not going to be surprised when all of a sudden the terms of a product they thought they signed up for turn out to be very different. So the idea is that the consumers are the ones who will be able to decide what sort of products they're interested in, and then the financial institutions will then kind of have to adjust to actually address those needs.
Well, and then, I mean, this gets really, really complicated because there are different kinds of bank charters. A lot of banks are chartered in the states. Fewer banks are chartered federally, and there are different rules that apply. A lot of the usury laws were state laws, which is why, for example, so many credit card banks chartered in South Dakota because they had more favorable laws. They could charge more interest. There were a lot of states who had caps on the amount of interest you could charge for loaning money. And so the corporations shopped around, found states that had more liberal laws and would allow them to do business how they wanted, and that's where they set up shop. So you had that going on. So you had some kind of like charter shopping, I suppose you could say. And you know, there hasn't been a real clear path to how we got this way. There's a lot of different, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of moving parts to this thing, and it's a very, very complex world. And I'm wondering if even with a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, if we're really going to get the kind of transparency that we all would like.
Well, that's obviously you know, the million-dollar question behind the bureau. It was obviously was created with the notion that we want that the bureau will be creating that sort of transparency. And you pointed out that you know you've seen financial institutions if a limit is put in place someplace that you know as a nature of their business they'll shop around and look to see if they can find a better deal somewhere else, which you know leads a lot of banks to set up shop in South Dakota. And actually, Elizabeth Warren has addressed this in previous comments about what she wants the Bureau ultimately to do, and she said, look, if you put forward a hard limit or you outlaw or you make it impossible for a financial institution to do a certain practice, all that's going to do is that's immediately going to have you know people working at the institution figuring out how to get around that. So, you basically end up just trying to keep up with banks and financial institutions who are constantly trying to work around the new rules you're putting forward. So her argument is that if you just focus on making the terms of the products clear, it makes it then basically it's just kind of all out in the open. And the consumers can see, okay, this is what this product will do for me, and I can decide whether or not I like the deal that they're offering or if I can get a better deal elsewhere or if I think this product isn't really right for me. So her perspective is that if we just put everything on the table and make it easier for consumers to understand, then we're not necessarily just constantly trying to change our rules to crack down on the new practices that are being thought up by banks and other financial institutions.
So it's still buyer beware, but the idea is to focus on the aware part
exactly.
And make sure we all understand. Okay. Mike in Milwaukee, let's hear what you have to say. Mike, good morning.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, functioning at least an 11th grade reading level means that a person can read the front page of a newspaper and understand what's going on, comprehend a city bus schedule, and fill out a job application without assistance. And I'd like to know, how would it disadvantage our economy if these financial instrument contracts are written and structured to be readable and understandable to a person with at least an 11th grade reading level?
Well, that's
Peter?
Clearly, you know, people who are on board with the mission of the Bureau, that's clearly, you know, the argument that they make is that there's, you know, you hear Elizabeth Warren say repeatedly, look, financial institutions don't have to worry about anything if we want to make the terms clear, because if they're offering good products that consumers want, that won't change. It's just that the consumers will better understand what exactly are in those products that they're offering. You know, the critics of the Bureau don't necessarily say we don't want the financial products to be easily understood, but you know their argument is that we don't know exactly what this bureau might do. Maybe they'll be too heavy-handed in what they try to do to banks. Maybe they go to banks and then they say we don't want you to offer this financial product, which you know they would argue is meddling too much in the private sphere. But you know, based on what we're hearing from the bureau, you know, at least at the outset, they're saying they want to focus on making that language easier to understand. And you know, so far it's you're not seeing a lot of critiques on that point. It's more what comes after that and the fact that we don't have a whole lot of control over what it might do.
Mike, thanks for the call. Boris in Boulder Junction, you'll be next. Good morning, Boris.
Good morning. I think the use of the term oversight in Congress is a non sequitur. The oversight of Congress, going back to Chris Dodd and Barney Frank and their various committees, is what got us into this housing debacle to begin with. Having said that, the commission is a good idea because it provides built-in oversight, which Congress is unable to provide because they are spending most of their time campaigning along with the president.
All right, Boris, thanks. Thanks for that comment. Peter, better to have this agency provide oversight than to try to have Congress do it.
Well, that's certainly an argument that gets made. Actually, a lot of the congressmen that are advocating for a commission in place also want to see Congress have more oversight. One of the other things that they're pushing for is they want to be able to, via the appropriations process, actually set the budget for the CFPB. Elizabeth Warren and officials at the Bureau have strongly opposed that because they argue no other banking regulators have their budget set by Congress. And their concern is that if Congress has the ability to set their budget, that makes their budget susceptible to the lobbying from, you know, financial institutions, for example. But the argument for a commission is that it allows for that kind of intrinsic oversight. It ensures that, you know, there's not one person at the top kind of dictating whatever the Bureau might do. But, you know, one of the going back to our discussion of the difficulty in getting nominations confirmed, kind of one of the intrinsic challenges there is that when you set up a five-person commission, that's five seats that you have to fill instead of just one.
Yeah, and if you can't fill one, how are you going to fill five? I guess would be the next piece of that. We've got about 5 minutes or so left to talk. I'd like to discuss a little bit more about Elizabeth Warren and what's next for her. This was kind of her baby. She was the one who dreamed this up. This was her dream, and she has said that, you know, seeing this actually coming to fruition was better than anything she dreamed. The agency wasn't as powerful as she wanted, but it's there. But now what's next for her? Because she won't be the head of this agency. Do you think that she's going to run against Scott Brown for Senate in Massachusetts?
Well, that's kind of the big question regarding Elizabeth Warren. There are certainly plenty of people who would love to see her decide to throw her hat into the ring there and run against Scott Brown. Some Democrats in the Senate have kind of tried to recruit her to that effort. But, you know, for the time being, she's been coy about it, basically hasn't said yes or no to the notion, basically said she's going to take a little bit of a break from this Consumer Bureau work, go back to Massachusetts, where she's a professor at Harvard University, and think about it. What she ends up deciding is still very much up in the air, but it's clear that if she were to decide to run, there would be a pretty good amount of support right at the outset from a number of liberal groups. The question is, you know, Scott Brown is actually a fairly popular candidate, a fairly popular senator in Massachusetts. Even if she were to decide to run, it's not as if it would be a slam dunk for her to take over that seat.
Okay, let's take another call. This time it'll be Diane in Milwaukee. Diane, good morning.
Hi, I'm wondering, do the Republicans realize that someday there'll be a Republican president? And if they continue to act in such a pig-headed way towards the Democrats, the shoe might be on the other foot someday, and the Democrats will treat that Republican president the same way and not approve his desires.
Well, what about it?
That's kind of the perpetual debate here is that, you know, sometime, you know, we see in Congress the shoe will always be on the other foot at some point. We don't know exactly when, but it's pretty safely to be assumed that no one party is going to be running the show the entire time. And actually, going back to this notion of a commission, that's one of the arguments that Republicans make for establishing the commission. They say, hey, look, you know, if we have a Democratic president now, they can appoint whoever they want to be the director. But what happens when there's a Republican president and all of a sudden the single person running the CFPB now is basically is a Republican? So maybe you should be on board with the idea of a commission, because that ensures that when the shoe's on the other foot, you're still going to have some sort of input in how the Bureau is run. But, you know, these confirmation battles over nominations have been going on back and forth with both parties for a long, long time. And, you know, given that it's one of the areas where Congress can really have a say in how the administration operates and who they have making the decisions there, I don't think that's something that's going to go away anytime soon either.
What do we know about Richard Cordray, who's been nominated to head this new bureau? He's a Democrat. He's been a vocal bank critic. What else do we know about him?
Well, that's right. You know, when he was attorney general at Ohio, he was one of the first, if not the first, state attorney general to kind of really start going after some of these mortgage servicers. You've heard about all the problems with robo-signing and various documentation issues and all of that. And Cordray was really one of the people who really led the charge on that, and he's not shied away from taking on other financial institutions in that capacity when he was there. He was actually one of the first people brought into the Bureau by Elizabeth Warren. He was originally brought in to head up the CFPB's enforcement work, and now he's obviously being elevated to be the agency's first director. And, you know, and what is, you know, probably, I don't think the administration would have nominated him if he didn't have Warren's blessing. And you know, ever since he's been announced as the nominee, she's been supportive of the pick, saying he'll do a great job, and it sounds as if, you know, he may not have the same profile as Elizabeth Warren, but it sounds as if they're very much kind of cut from the same cloth, as it were, on these issues.
The of course, getting the backing of Elizabeth Warren isn't necessarily going to make him too many friends among the Republicans, but we'll have to see, I guess, whether he can actually get nominated or not, and that'll just be a matter of time. Speaking of which, we're out of time. Peter Schrader, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure.
Peter Schrader is a reporter for The Hill on finance, taxes, and corporate governance, and a regular contributor to their On the Money blog. Rhonda Fanning produced this hour of programming. Chrissy Pease handled on-air production. If you'd like to listen to it again, you can go to the go to WPR.org and go to the Kathleen Dunn page and go to this program note, and you can listen to the whole show over again whenever you'd like. Come another hour about fish. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.